The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
It is Monday, April 29th, 2024. Ready to begin the 4 o'clock hour. I'll start, though, by telling you about the 5 o'clock hour. Robert Korn Revere is back with us, one of the top First Amendment attorneys in the country, currently chief counsel on the staff of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, a.k.a. FIRE. Let's continue the conversation about what's happening on college campuses and the right of free speech, even hate speech. Bob will explain. It is a Dave Congleton show, always your hometown radio talk show. I confess that I get a lot of my show segments from Facebook and social media. And I came across a post by our friend Jim Gregory, well-known historian and author of 5 different books, talking about how April was the 85th anniversary of the Slo County Airport. I sensed a good discussion. Guess who's here? It's Jim Gregory. Jim, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. Always happy to talk to you.
You have a website for your books, don't you?
I do. You can find me on Amazon.com. I have a website, RioGrandeHistory.com. I'm a frequent poster on Facebook. I guess I kind of have a big mouth.
Well, see, I need people like you.
Yeah, you go.
Keep posting.
Okay.
85 years of the Slo County Airport in April.
I actually missed it by a week, and I usually pride myself on catching big dates in local history. But I tried to make up for it with that Facebook post because that airport is such a big part of local history. It's a part of my life, too. And by golly, it opened in April of 1939. It was the second airport in San Luis Obispo. The first one opened in 1928. It was called Clark Field, named after a local banker who eventually became the president of, for crying out loud, Union Oil. Huh. And it operated off of Tank Farm Road. But beginning in early 1938 with the proverbial war clouds gathering, both the National Guard and local businessmen began kind of lobbying for a bigger facility. In fact, there was a flyover of San Luis Obispo of National Guard officers in their airplanes. They landed at Clark Field and pitched the idea of an airport to the Chamber of Commerce. And eventually the construction got underway in late 1938. It was funded by the Department of War, by the Works Progress Administration, and by the state. And I think one of the stipulations on the part of the Board of Supervisors is that no local money be put into it. So it was wholly funded from outside sources, the federal government and the state government. And a few months later, in April of 1939, they had a grand opening.
But it's called McChesney Field.
Yeah,
and who's McChesney?
That's a tribute to a dairy family, and dairy families and aviation might not seem like they go together, but they do. Of course, one of our most famous World War II aviators and one of my personal heroes, Elwin Rigetti, was the commander of the 55th Fighter Group. He flew a P-51 Mustang. Sadly, was lost over Germany on his 30th birthday in 1945. But he came from a dairy family. His cousin, Maurice, flew a B-24 bomber. The McChesneys had a dairy on Verde Canyon, which is off of Corbett Canyon Road. It was the Royal Oak Dairy. And these McChesneys were tall drinks of water. They tended to be kind of long and stringy. And Leroy was the brother who, on his way to and from the milk barn, would take a break and gaze up into the sky and look idly at the buzzards overhead. He was fascinated by the way they drifted on the currents of air. So he eventually would become an aviator himself. What cinched the deal, and there's a photograph in the McChesney family album. an airplane from Santa Maria Airlines, believe it or not, in 1922 made a wrong way landing on a farm next to the McChesney farm. And I guess the boys were smitten by it. That kind of took off from there. Eventually, McChesney will become the head of California's Civil Aeronautics Board and a big proponent of civil aviation in San Luis Obispo County.
So we know the impact of the train when it finally came to San Luis. What was the connection or impact of the airport when it finally opened in 1939? Did it make a difference?
It did. It made a difference. It was a selling point, obviously, for businesses hoping to locate in San Luis Obispo. But it had a secondary purpose. It was in part in service to the military. The 40th Division at Camp San Luis Obispo had a very small grass airfield near what is the Officers Club today. That was pretty much it. So during the war, even though it was a civil airport, it also would have seen a lot of traffic, transport planes especially, in and out that were connected to Camp San Luis Obispo. So it had dual purposes. But it obviously retained its value after the war and then would begin to become a hub for passenger airlines.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember this because the building where the Spirit of San Luis restaurant is now was the original terminal
for the
commercial passengers.
Many, many years ago, and then there was the other terminal, and now there's the...
So this is the new airport is really the third terminal.
Right, right. And the original airport was constructed in part thanks to a fortuitous grounding of a Norwegian lumber ship off Oceano.
Yeah,
the Elge ran aground.
The Elge.
And they had to throw lumber overboard. This is 1938. And this 1938, the Depression lasted a little late in California, later than it did in some other parts of America. So this was free stuff, this lumber floating ashore. So hordes of citizens descended on the beach and began hauling the lumber ashore. And it said, I have only heard the story, I can't provide the provenance, but it said that some of the outbuildings at the original airport were built from lumber from the Norwegian ship Elge, as was part of what is today the Briscoe hardware store and lumberyard in Arroyo Grande. One young man drowned in trying to bring pieces of lumber ashore, and Elwin Rigetti himself, the future fighter group commander, almost drowned but was rescued. But thanks to the Elge and to the industry of some Cal Poly graduates, we had an airport going by the time the war came.
And actual use for Norwegian wood.
There you go.
Jim Gregory is on this broadcast, author and historian. We're just talking about the history of aviation in the county, marking 85 years this month of our Slo County Airport. More conversation, more stories still to come. You're listening to The Dave Congleton Show. Happy Monday. If you're just joining us, my guest for the hour is author and historian Jim Gregory, talking about aviation in the county. 85 years of our county airport this month. But let's get personal for a couple minutes. A couple stories come out in terms of your connection to aviation. One, the plane crash in 1958.
I was 6 years old, and it was a Navy Banshee jet. And the pilot almost made it. The beginning of the airstrip, as you go into San Luis Obispo, and what was then called Edna Road, it was just to the left of Edna Road. The Navy jet came to rest on a little hillock just to the right. So he had to be no more than 100 yards from making it to the runway when he crashed. The young pilot was killed. And I remember going into San Luis. We lived in Arroyo Grande with my dad. And the fuselage was largely intact, and it remained on that hillside, I think, for a week or so before it was finally removed. But it was such a poignant sight because the young man was so close to making it and didn't quite.
And then 2 years later, you took your very first plane flight.
I was thrilled. My dad was Madonna Construction's comptroller, so he was bidding a job up in Marysville. And he asked if my brother Bruce and I wouldn't like to fly up to Marysville with Alex Madonna's pilot, Earl Thompson. And Madonna then had a beautiful twin-engine airplane and an Aero Commander. And we, of course, said, sure, after running it past my dubious mother. But Thompson, as it turns out, and his brothers-in-law, Chris and Dave Hoover, were the first ones to administer the airport back when it opened in 1939. They were all products of Cal Poly's aviation program, which, believe it or not, was famous around the world. And so with Mr. Thompson at the controls, we took off up to Marysville, had lunch there, and flew back. I've flown on lots of airplanes since then, but the charm of that flight was flying over, say, Highway 99 and seeing the farm fields below and the cars moving. And then we flew over Suisun Bay and flew over the mothball fleet. So that was kind of a thrill. You could actually see stuff. And I don't think I've had an airplane ride since where I could say that.
That must have been pretty cool.
It was. It was awesome. And that's where 60 years later, I wrote a book about World War II flyers because I fell in love with airplanes on that flight when I was a little boy.
Hmm. I want to hear about Cal Poly and their connection to county aviation. I would think they'd be a reason why aviation grew.
Yeah, again, Mr. Thompson and his brothers-in-law, Chris and Dave. By the way, Thompson was also the personal pilot for Ibn Saud, the king of Saudi Arabia. His wife, Dorothy, was a music teacher, well-beloved, well-known in San Luis Obispo. And so while he was, Earl was doing his stint as King Ibn Saud's pilot, she taught music to the king's children. There were 52 of them.
So 52?
52.
Children.
He was a prolific king.
I guess. I don't know how he had time to govern.
I don't know either, but Dorothy never ran out of music students, that's for sure. So they were all products of Poly's aviation program. The first flight instructor there also was Ed Laupe. He'd been a second baseman on the Mustang baseball team. Poly had really a kind of a pioneering accomplishment in the area of aviation. They were the first American college to build a monoplane, and that was in 1928. Mm-hmm. And it was they called it Glenmont, and it was a tribute to their two teachers at Poly. And there's a wonderful picture of it in the Cal Poly archives, the two instructors and the students gathered around it. It looks suspiciously like Lindbergh's Spirit of St. Louis, down to the fact that there's no windshield. Lindbergh needed a periscope to see forward. That's not a surprise because Lindbergh had made his transatlantic flight just the year before, 1927. So Poly's the first college to build a monoplane. The program became so well known that about 11 months before her disappearance, Amelia Earhart flew into San Luis Obispo. She said she loved flying over San Luis. She said, your town is all tucked in and cozy like I've always wanted to visit. Mm. So she visited the aviation department at Cal Poly, talked to the instructors, talked to some of the students, loved everything about it, except, of course, she asked, and where are the young women students?
Yeah. Of course, where were they?
Where were they indeed? But
women weren't at Cal Poly in that year, were they?
No.
They didn't come until later.
No. My sister was not among the first female students, but she went to Poly in 1960. I'm exaggerating a bit, but I think it was a three-day ride from one women's restroom to another at Cal Poly. She was the only woman in most of her math classes. She was a math major, and it was not easy for her, probably because she was also more than likely the smartest student in her math classes. That's my big sister for you. She's a fat puppy in the litter when it comes to brains in my family.
Jim Gregory is with us. So Amelia Earhart actually came to Cal Poly.
And loved the program. There's a marvelous picture of her with the instructors, and there's another marvelous picture of her. Julian McPhee, the president of Poly, had five gorgeous daughters. And so there's another picture of Earhart with some of Julian McPhee's daughters posing in front of the aviation building. And of course, down to my days at Brandt School, the aviation department was part of Poly Royal when we had it, and I distinctly remember one of the exhibits. They would fire off a jet engine for us little school kids, and dang, it was impressive.
And what about the aviation program today at Poly? Does it exist? Is it still as?
As far as I know, it's still first rate. They had a head start on pretty much everyone else in the United States, and I'm sure that they turn out some excellent engineers.
We're talking about the history of aviation. And so this, the first college built monoplane, 1928.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a beaut. It's parked in what looks like a cow pasture, which, you know, shouldn't be that surprising. But the young man, again, this photo is in the Cal Poly archives, and you can see it online. The young man around the plane looked very pleased with themselves, as they have every right to be. So that was a big deal. And it would be products of Poly who would administer and teach. There's a marvelous ad in the old Telegram Tribune, 1940, that advertises flying lessons at the airport. No military expectations, something like that in the ad, which of course was a bald-faced lie. That's exactly what they were training pilots for, to get them ready for World War II, which is coming soon.
Was there much controversy surrounding the opening of the airport 85 years ago? Was it a subject of debate?
I think the fact that it was essentially free would have quelled any objections to it. It was, I think, seen as a great the Chamber of Commerce certainly endorsed it, and since somebody else paid for it, that made it immensely popular. And airplanes were a big deal.
Why was it the location that it is now? Why is that location chosen?
The land was donated by a local dairy farmer, and it's it's windy there, which is helpful for taking off, things like that. And it was far enough outside of town not to be an impingement.
We have to remember what the town would have been like 85 years ago.
Yeah.
Not, in terms of the borders, it's not like it is today.
It was a punctuation mark compared to what San Luis Obispo is today. In fact, there's a big, in the last few years, there's a big development near Rigetti Hill, which is south of town. And that's where the first airplane flew over San Luis Obispo. It took off from near Rigetti Hill on July 4th, 1910. And it was flown by a guy named Lincoln Beachy, or Hillary Beachy, rather. Hillary and his brother Lincoln had a bicycle shop in San Francisco. Well, by golly, so did the Wright brothers. So they were kind of the West Coast equivalent of the Wright brothers. And Hillary took the plane up and had to cut the flight a little short. So the city fathers demanded and got a partial refund. But it was in a newspaper for weeks before July 4th. I'm sorry, but it took some of the luster off the potato sack races and the county band. It was on display in a shop window downtown San Luis Obispo. Lincoln would live into old age. Or rather, Hillary would. I get their names confused, pardon me. His little brother, Lincoln, who was glamorous, handsome, flew around the United States, did stunts, raced against Barney Oldfield, who raced here at Exposition Park. And sadly, he died. His plane crashed in 1915 in San Francisco Bay.
We're visiting with author and historian Jim Gregory, telling us the story of aviation on the Central Coast. More stories still to come after news and traffic and weather. This is Hometown Radio. Is that when you were 8 years old, you get to fly in Alex Madonna's private plane?
Was it
pink? Was there any pink? Had to be pink.
No, it was kind of sky blue and white. White with sky blue trim. No pink.
Obviously, fellas didn't design it.
No.
Author and historian Jim Gregory, we're marking 85 years of our airport, and Jim is using this to share with us the history of aviation in the county. As we continue, we mentioned the war. I would imagine that Cal Poly and the whole airport played a role in the troops and preparing.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have been troops that would have been ferried in and out of the airport. VIPs, the generals who were visiting Camp San Luis Obispo, would have flown in as well. And training, aviation training, was a big deal on the Central Coast as well. Probably the biggest facility was what is today Hancock College in Santa Maria. And during World War II, it was Hancock Field, and it would become a training base for primary flight training, which is the first step in actual flight training for Army Air Forces cadets. 9,000 young men went through Hancock's training program in World War II, so it was a sizable operation. They flew little biplanes called Stearman Cadets. So the cadets flew cadets. They had a top speed of 108 miles an hour. The P-38s at the other end of town flew four times faster than that. But that was more than enough. They learned navigation. They obviously learned how to fly in a two-seater with the instructor in the back. So these little planes would have been a common sight over northern Santa Barbara and southern San Luis Obispo County during World War II.
Do you know much about Alan Hancock, the man?
Alan Hancock asked his mom's permission if he could drill for oil on the family's ranch, which is La Brea. And he and his partner, William Orchid, not surprisingly, since we think of the La Brea tar pits, every time they sank a well, it produced. So he became fabulously wealthy and became a huge proponent of aviation, including funding the first Trans-Pacific flight undertaken by an Australian crew. He financed that. So that was one of the reasons that Hancock Field was chosen by the Army Air Forces, by Hap Arnold, the head of the Army Air Forces, as one of the training bases. There were several around the United States, but we had one right here on the Central Coast because of Alan Hancock.
Well, the man has to be impressive. I mean, they named both the college and the airport after him.
Darn tootin'. He's
that's pretty impressive.
He's also in local egg lore. I'm not sure if they're around anymore, but Rosemary Eggs. He also founded an egg farm. Is named after his daughter. So next time you go to the store, and if they still have them around here, Rosemary Eggs come from Alan Hancock.
I know Rosemary Eggs.
Yeah.
I see them all the time in the store.
Yeah, that was one of his investments.
Surprised they're not Hancock eggs.
No fault to him, because I raised chickens when I was little. So
let's take a call. We've got Paul in San Luis. Hey, Paul.
Hello, Dave. Hello,
hey, Paul. Jim.
Now, Jim, correct me if I'm wrong. Was your mom an elementary school teacher?
My big sister was.
Your big sister?
Yeah.
She was my first grade teacher.
That is awesome.
At Sensheimer.
Oh, that's awesome. She now lives in Oildale, and is very, since she loves horses, she married a man who has a boarding stables over there, and she taught for, I think, 35 years, but that's wonderful to hear.
Yeah, she taught at Sensheimer Elementary School, right?
She did, and she taught at North Oceano. She started out at my alma mater, Branch School in Arroyo Grande, which was pretty darn small, but she taught in the Valley for many, many years.
Yeah, great teacher.
Thank you.
Yeah, and what I wanted to ask you about was, there was a folklore about a P-38 crashing in Santa Maria, right in downtown.
Yeah.
You know, he was a soldier that was training.
Right, right. There were actually three that month. That was January 1945. And these were advanced pilots. They were about to go overseas. So even for advanced pilots, flying was extremely dangerous. Two P-38s collided over Corbett Canyon. One pilot bailed out. The other one didn't make it. The same month, another P-38, they were practicing strafing runs on the beach between Oceana and Guadalupe, and he didn't make it out of his dive. He went straight in. The one you're thinking of did occur in downtown Santa Maria the same month, January 1945. P-38 fell into the Rusconi Cafe on Broadway, and it killed the young pilot, it killed Mrs. Rusconi, and it killed the fry cook. So that one is, in fact, if you might try to Google that, there is a photograph of the aftermath. You can see a plume of smoke coming out of the roof of the cafe. So a terrific series of tragedies. So flying was dangerous in the very early days. It was still dangerous in World War II.
Paul?
There was also something else I wanted to ask you. There was, you know, because my parents used to take us out to the San Luis Airport just to kind of, when we were kids, just to watch the planes take off and land. And if I remember correctly, there was a P-51 that was there for years. And my dad told me that a mailman in town owned it. And wow. It's just kind of hard to believe, but do you remember any of that?
I don't remember that, and I should, because that is my absolute favorite airplane in the whole entire universe.
Well, maybe it didn't happen.
I do remember, though, that Kent Blankenberg, who was one of the publishers of the Five Cities Times Press Recorder, had a Lockheed Electra Jr., which looked very much like the plane that Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan took on their last flight. They left the hangar doors open one day, and it was just inside, all gleamy and silvery. And I saw it, and it was my little heart went pitter pat. It was just a gorgeous airplane.
Well, there you go.
Was that plane around here? I mean, just recently, or was that an old time plane?
I mean, it was sold to, I think, to, I don't want to say for sure, but it seems to me it's now perhaps in Arizona. But we had it around us here in San Luis Obispo County in the late 60s, maybe the early through the 1970s.
That's before me. Because I remember seeing a Lockheed Electra at the Santa Maria Airport.
It's a lovely airplane, isn't it?
Hmm. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, Paul, thank you very much for checking in. Jim Gregory on this broadcast. I'm trying to picture what this is like, late 30s, even throughout the war, of here we are in this beautiful spot, quiet rural area, and then all of a sudden we're preparing for a war and there are planes up in the air and they're crashing. That had to be a real shock to the system for people here.
It was it had to be overwhelming. There were three times more servicemen. If you go from Camp Roberts south to Camp Cook near Lompoc, there were three times more servicemen in on the Central Coast than there were civilians. So we were outnumbered 3-1 by young men from the Army Air Forces, obviously the Army. There was a Marine Naval base at Morro Bay. And then there was the Naval Aviation Program at Cal Poly. 3,000 Navy cadets went through Poly's V-5 program as pre-flight training. So this place was busy. I kind of like to call it a friendly invasion. There were servicemen and servicewomen who outnumbered the local population.
On the Stolberg text line, my guest is receiving well-deserved praise. I want to say thank you to your guest. I feel like I've received a semester of history education in an hour.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm like most history teachers. There's nothing I love quite so much as the sound of my own voice.
We'll come back for a final segment with Jim Gregory. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. On the Stolberg text line, I worked for Kent and Sandy Blankenberg and can confirm their plane was kept in Arizona as of 2015.
That's awesome. Thank you, sir, or ma'am, for submitting that. It was a gorgeous airplane.
So describe it again, please.
Lockheed Electra Jr., similar model to Vegas. It had a twin boom tail. And twin engines, all gleamy and silvery and just gorgeous.
All right. So in this last segment, we're going to talk about some individual aviators.
Yeah, we had several young men and women who either lived in San Luis Obispo County at the time or settled here after the war, who saw combat or did practice training runs during the war. One of the ones, my friend Carol Roberts wrote a marvelous story about a guy named Peter Heller, who had a boat shop in Grover Beach, Grover City, then Grover Beach, for many years. I went to school with his son, Lee. He was a tail gunner, a four-engine bomber, a B-24. So he was sat on a little bicycle seat at the very end of the airplane. Now, when bombers take off and land, the whole flight crew gathers in the center of the plane to establish a better center of gravity. So that was where Peter was supposed to be one day when his B-24 took off. But he fell asleep on his little bicycle seat in the tail of the airplane. The bomber took off, flew for a few feet, and then crashed. The entire tail of the plane snapped off, spun around with Peter still inside of it. The rest of the plane blew up. The entire crew was killed except for Peter Heller. On another mission, coming home, his B-24 had to ditch at sea. Heller flew outside of the plane, popped open his Mae West, his life vest, and started to swim until he realized he could stand up. They were that close to shore. And once again, the rest of the plane cracked up on some rocks, and the crew was killed.
The vest is called his Mae West.
It's called a Mae West. That was the inflatable life vest. And for reasons I'm not sure I want to go into here on the air.
Appreciate that.
It was very effective, at least for a short time.
Hmm. So poor Peter Heller, two plane crashes.
Well, there was a third. Yeah. There was a third. His plane crash landed on return from a mission. Peter pushed a comrade out of the plane, and then he came out, and they started running for their lives. So, by golly, the rest of the crew got out of the plane and started running for their lives, too. But they stopped 50 yards short of the plane, which caught fire and exploded. And except for Peter and his friend he pushed out of the airplane, the rest of that crew died. So Peter Heller's nickname, obviously, was Lucky. And I just don't know how anyone could have survived any one of those, let alone three.
Survived three.
Absolutely.
And all those others were killed.
Yeah. Just incredible survival story. There's a we lost Dorothy Mae Moulton Rooney from Los Osos 2 years ago. She died at 102. She was a WASP, a Women's Air Force Service pilot. She trained at Avenger Field in Sweetwater, Texas, which she said was a misnomer, and eventually was assigned to Williams Air Force Base in Arizona. She loved to fly. She never told her flight instructors that she had a very slight, undetectable, evidently heart murmur that caused her to pass out when she was pulling G's.
Oh, great.
So the one thing she hated was doing loops, because she would pass out momentarily. But her job was to fly, they were called Texans, AT-6 trainers for advanced training, was to fly Texans that were just out of the repair shop to make sure they'd been repaired. Because, good Lord, you would not want to have a male cadet crash his AT-6 trainer, so why not let Dorothy do it? Most of the time, they'd been fixed, but I remember she told one time at 8,000 feet over the desert, her engine quit. And she could hear the wind rustling through the open cockpit and not much else. She went through, there's a checklist which has many, many, many steps to restarting your AT-6 engine. She went through it. Nothing happened. She went through it again. Nothing happened. She's losing altitude the whole time. She's looking over the side of the cockpit, and she can see the pine trees and the rocks below. And then for some reason, she hit the carburetor heater switch, which has absolutely nothing to do with restarting an AT-6 engine, and the engine caught, and she made it back to base.
What?
She later said, "I never had so much fun in my life." She was a wonderful woman, very much beloved in Los Osos, and she was a character. And to the end of her life, flying airplanes during World War II was a highlight.
Well, I told you when you came in that I'm sure they're still around. But back in the early days of the show, I would interview women pilots. They were the Flying 99s.
And the organization is still around today. It includes, I'm happy to say, many Cal Poly undergraduates, young women who are members of the 99s. Grace McChesney, Leroy's wife, for whom the airport is named. Leroy had a heart attack, so Grace took up flying lessons to be able to take the controls in case Leroy had another heart attack, and she became a superb flyer. She was a member of the 99s, participated in the cross-country powder puff derby races. So flying is something that definitely runs in the McChesney family, the genes or DNA or whatever. His brother, Jess, flew 35 combat missions as a B-24 pilot in World War II, crash-landed twice. His crew survived both instances. And after the war, he flew 100 relief missions during the Berlin airlift and then came home and became a real estate agent.
But flying was always in their blood.
Flying was always in their blood. And I think it was, if you carry, we've got in the South County Historical Society, one of the museums, we've got a yoke that you put around your neck, and it's for carrying buckets of milk.
Yeah.
And two buckets of milk are the equivalent of about 80 pounds. So I think if you're a young dairy farmer, flying must have looked infinitely more appealing than becoming a dairy farmer.
Jim Gregory on this broadcast, but of all these aviators, the one for you is Rigetti.
Yeah, he.
Sad story.
It was his birthday. He just lost a pilot the mission before, who was married and I believe had a child. He had another pilot, who this would have been his last mission, and who was in the same position. So Rigetti took him aside and said, look, when we reach the target, you are to hightail it back home. You will have completed your missions. So that young man survived. And Rigetti, who had a wife and a little girl back here in San Luis Obispo, did not. He crashed, radioed back to his squadron mates that he was okay. He'd broken his nose on a gun sight. He was never heard from again.
You've told that story before, and it's just... Because you know that he made it. They heard his voice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's so incredibly poignant and so, it's one of the mysteries of the war.
But are they still continuing the search for these kind of unfinished stories World War II?
They are. There are groups who are dedicated to that. We lost a ball turret gunner from San Luis Obispo on his first combat mission. He was killed. And there was a German group that returned his wristwatch to his nieces in San Luis Obispo 75 years after he died. So there are people who do good work like that.
Hmm. I think, Jim, this would be the basis of book number 6, personally.
Well, that might not be a bad idea.
Well, this follows up on the Stolberg text line. A listener is asking us to direct them as to where they can find out more information about the history of aviation in the county. Jim finishes writing his book.
Well, at least in terms of World War II, I did write a book, Central Coast Aviators in World War II. And it is at my favorite local bookstore is Monarch Books, mm-hmm, on Branch Street in Arroyo Grande. And I think they also have it at the History Center of San Luis and at Barnes & Noble.
Hmm. That'd be a good place to start. What's the future of aviation in this county? Because we had Paso Robles right before the late Mayor Steve Martin passed away. They were making a big push to be a spaceport.
I think that's probably where the future lies. I mean, we've got Vandenberg Space Force Base now, which is at one time seemed like kind of a silly thing. It turns out it's not so silly after all. So aerospace, I think, has a big future in San Luis Obispo County, both because of Vandenberg and because of Paso Robles.
No,
Paso
Robles is the geography.
Place. Yeah. Paso has a fabulous aviation history. And if you haven't been to the Estrella Warbirds Museum up there, it's incredible.
What's there?
They've got all kinds of planes and vehicles, World War II, Korean era, more recent, and they have some wonderful docents. It's a very warm and friendly place, and that's what I like in a museum.
What's the name that you associate with Paso Robles Aviation?
With Paso Robles Aviation, Estrella Field was also associated with P-38s, the planes that were based at Santa Maria Army Air Base, which is today's Santa Maria Airport. That was an auxiliary field. So another plane that would have been common over the skies of San Luis Obispo, was one of the so-called sexiest fighters of World War II. The enemy called them the fork-tailed devil because they had twin booms, a very unusual airplane, and twin engines.
Yeah, this may be outside your wheelhouse, but I've always been curious as to why Santa Maria doesn't have more commercial aviation business, because it's such a nice airport.
It is. It is a nice airport. I think that they're building on that. They had a marvelous air show there last year, mm-hmm. and I saw airplanes that I had never seen before. So somebody there is doing their PR work, and hopefully they call it the Air Fest. Hopefully that'll be an annual event and kind of boost them a little bit.
Well, I remember interviewing a father and daughter from outside the area who were coming to the Santa Maria Airport and setting up some kind of museum and air show. And maybe this is it.
I think that's it. And I think also my book just might be available in the gift shop there.
All right.
So there you go. There's another place.
Jim Gregory has been our guest. We always appreciate the conversation. I got about 40 seconds, sir, for a final thought about Slo County Aviation.
Since one of my specialties is World War II, Elwin Rigetti was among 18 young San Luis Obispo County men, flyers who were lost in World War II. Half of them were killed in combat, everywhere from Papua New Guinea to the Battle of the Bulge. Half of them died in accidents. So it was flying as late as World War II. Go back to the first airplane flight in 1910. It was still dangerous.
Happy anniversary to the Slo County Airport.
Happy anniversary, McChesney Field.
Yeah. You and I have to stick around for the 100th. I got 15 years. I'll make it.
Okay.
You will too.
It's a deal.
All right, Jim. Thank you. Off we go. News, traffic, weather. Bob Korn Revere joins us next.
The 920 KBEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kbec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111911.